From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence, at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We're going to be talking North Carolina and Hurricane Florence, the aftermath, Trump's visit. We're going to talk the fiasco of Brett Kavanaugh going on in D.C. right now and some of those new Civitas polls, which are very, very interesting. We had a poll launch today, so we'll jump into some of that today. Brooke, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm well fed right now too, so I'm happy because I just left the poll launch.
Yeah, it was a blast. I had a good time. I was really impressed with the guy from D.C., Brock. I don't remember his last name. I know you do.
McCleary.
He, in my opinion, he was the most impressive sort of narrator and guy that jumps into the data that we've ever had at Civitas since I've been here. So I was really impressed. What I liked is because he had such a broad knowledge of some of the national issues, he was able to compare North Carolina to other states, North Carolina nationally, what Republicans are concerned about in this election cycle. So I thought he brought up a lot of great points, some things that I hadn't thought of yet, too. So
yeah, context is important, right? We understand that just right. In our day-to-day lives, you need context to make informed decisions. And so Brock McCleary, he is the founder of Harper Polling, which is the poll company that we use to conduct our polling. And so he does this for people all across the nation or institutions and campaigns. So he's got a lot of context that he brought to the table. So we're going to dig into that a little bit later. But let's also, last week we talked about Hurricane Florence. We were preparing for it, especially here in the Raleigh area. It was looking like we were going to get a direct hit, but it veered south and devastated parts of the coastline, as well as inland Fayetteville, where a lot of my friends and family live. It's just been really, really difficult. And I know we've got a lot of recovery efforts that are underway. So what are some of your thoughts now looking post-Florence and now in the trenches of recovery?
Well, it's just devastating to see so much of the eastern part of the state still underwater in areas. You just notice sort of the traffic flow has been disrupted. A lot of homes damaged considerably. I think there's some silver lining in the fact that the damage could have been much more catastrophic if it landed, as a 3, 4, or 5. But the way that storm just sat over North Carolina and just poured was really debilitating for a lot of the state. And to me, it was interesting, too, to see Donald Trump come in yesterday. That made a lot of headlines, obviously. And you saw Roy Cooper with him. You saw him on that sort of that notable picture on Air Force One with some of the congressional and Senate delegation from North Carolina as he was making his way in. And you can kind of argue, what is the purpose of presidents coming in for a national disaster? Because that's really a 20th century phenomenon. But to me, it was just kind of It's kind of neat to see the president, and there was obviously some good photo opportunities for him in that sense. But my heart and prayers go out to folks in North Carolina who've been impacted by this. There's so many, and after having lived in through Katrina and seen some of that, it's so devastating because when you lose so many things, it's sort of hard, Brooke, to start over again. Especially if there's a catastrophic loss to your house. And a lot of your possessions are gone. It's really hard to pick yourself back up because you're just sort of thrown into an unknown situation. And I know I saw a couple posts of friends that I have on Facebook that are in that side of the state that were just saying, they were noticing that, their insurance doesn't cover certain things because once you get into the insurance, if you just have homeowners insurance, doesn't mean you're impacted or covered at all by a hurricane. So that's devastating. Then you're kind of left to FEMA or you're left to other organizations for help. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand. And, it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of the rebuilding. Are they just going to rebuild the same way in some of the beachfront property or what?
Well, I heard during Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest was being interviewed on Fox News, yesterday. And the host of the show asked, is New Bern going to be rebuilt? So New Bern, as you well know, was hit very hard by this hurricane. Massive amounts of flooding. And the lieutenant governor said that this was probably, a once in a lifetime sort of devastation for New Bern when it comes to flooding. So, of course, it will be rebuilt, but people are starting all over. I have a friend in Wilmington who she showed us on Facebook photos of her home, and just the whole first floor is completely flooded. It's a brand new house.
It ruins the house, too. Once you have water damage like that, your house is never the same. It's ruined. I mean, I saw that after Katrina. It's like, I didn't realize that if you got even just a few inches of water in your house, it completely ruined your house.
I have another friend that lives off of the Cape Fear River in Fayetteville, and she had to evacuate, of course, and then ended up going and spending the night in her flower shop where she lives. And it's an excellent flower shop if you're in the Fayetteville area. Kelly's florist is amazing. But she had to stay there and then started getting damaged. You know, damage was occurring to her property there even. And so it's just a lot of people are really struggling. So if you're in an area that was not impacted, consider giving. We have on our website at nccivitas.org a list of organizations that we think are very worthy of donations. Of course, it's not a comprehensive list. There are tons. And actually, one of the organizations that we didn't get to mention, but that our CEO, Donald Bryson, had sent the staff later on was called Operation Barbecue. And yeah, that's another organization. So News and Observer did a piece on them. And I think this is great. It's the title of it is With Enough Queue for 25,000 Meals a Day, Nonprofit Feeds a Recovering Wilmington. And they're set up, I believe, in Wilmington and the Fayetteville-Fort Bragg area. And they're just there delivering meals. It's from two, I guess, pit masters from the Kansas City area, even though their barbecue isn't as good as ours. They created this nonprofit to help people in the face of natural disasters. And so Operation Barbecue is what it's called. And they're doing what so many other great organizations are doing. And that's what we are called to do as humans. We need to be helping other humans, not just looking to the government to do it, because the government is slow moving.
Yeah, they're very slow. I mean, we saw that Katrina and other hurricanes, the big one over Houston. That's so right. And I think if you're paralyzed about not knowing what to do, I think, Brooke, one of the best things you can do is, even if you can scrape together $50 or something, and try to give to an organization that you know that 100% of the resources are going to hurricane recovery. Because I think a lot of times there's a lot of people that's like, I don't know what to do. I don't have time. And that's okay. You know, a lot of people are in that position. They just don't know what to do. But it's really best to give to organizations that have the ability to already, you know, they already have the infrastructure to help out. They already have the volunteers. And it, just giving those organizations makes a big impact. They can go out and meet immediate needs for food and shelter for people and clothing that they may have lost. So I'm impressed with a lot of those church groups that just go in and just, they learned a lot of lessons after Katrina. They learned how to, you know, just to work around bureaucracy. And one of the things I thought was cool after the tornadoes in Tuscaloosa that were so just so damaging is that they had, this church had trained people in disaster response, a big Methodist church in Montgomery, Alabama. And they just had a lot of men with chainsaws who just started, you know, clearing out rubble and doing things like that. And I saw a picture someone posted near Wilmington where a church had opened up where they had guys out there helping people getting their chainsaws up and running and things like that.
So even for my own home church in Fayetteville, I've been watching Facebook videos and photos of them just fixing up the church because it received extensive water damage. But then there's another church in Fayetteville who was able to open up as a shelter. And there was a 13-year-old boy there. He was spending his birthday, his 13th birthday, in the shelter. And so they had a birthday party with all the people that were there that had evacuated and were celebrating with him. I mean, life is still going on right for these people. There are still children who are having memories now of their 13th or 5th birthdays in shelters. And to see people like the churches and just everyday North Carolinians rally around Absolutely. Others to help. Yeah. It's so good. It does my heart good to see. I know it does yours too. And so anyways, the best of humanity comes out in these circumstances, and that's something we can be grateful for. And so, you know, if you're looking too much at the news, watching the political theater, it's easy to get discouraged. But remember, that's not the full picture by any means. It's actually a really small, slim view, and maybe to the swampiest parts of human nature. But there's so much good out there. I almost hate to actually have to pivot to the swampy stuff with the Kavanaugh
the swampiest of swampy, yeah.
But anyway, so if you're looking again for places to donate, there are plenty out there. Samaritan's Purse, Baptist on Mission, Salvation Army, Operation Barbecue, which is the one we just spoke about. So go ahead and look for ways to get involved and help out those in need. But let's go ahead and pivot. We are going to keep talking about Kavanaugh because it's still in the news.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
Did
the
you
news.
Expect it
people
to be
People are going
long?
Crazy. People who I thought were, and I'll say this for the right and left, people I thought who were just sort of mild-mannered on Twitter, I've seen sort of explode over Kavanaugh. And I've even
How
had
so?
A,
How
I,
so?
I just meant like that, you know, they're kind of lecturing, like, oh, everything's too politicized. We need to like chill out about politics. And all of a sudden Kavanaugh comes along, you know, going ballistic.
Keyboard courage.
And I'm actually, I'm one of those people like, I don't really like to talk about politics a ton on social media just because, you know, I deal with a lot of it at work. And I do some of it, but I don't really like saturate my social media with political things just because, you know, politics to me has a place and there's a limit to it. But I've even wanted to jump in because, good gosh, Brooke, I mean, I'll say this, and I've kind of been holding my powder on Kavanaugh, and I thought maybe this woman may have some credible points, but now I just think that this whole thing is just a sham to sort of delay what's, you know, his eventual confirmation, which
everybody
expected.
So do you think he's still going to be confirmed?
I do. I think unfairly, though, to him is just his reputation will be forever sullied because of this and because of the political environment we live in.
Oh, well, do you think Clarence Thomas's reputation was
absolutely
forever
I think
sullied?
When people think of Clarence Thomas, they still think of Anita Hill. I mean, I was a boy when that was going on. I can't remember exactly how old I was. It was like 89 maybe, or 90 or 91, one of those years, maybe 90 or 91. But I remember vividly watching those hearings. I was very interested in. I just remember at that time there was a lot of pressure that, oh, I believe Anita Hill, because I think a lot of people were saying that Anita Hill is truthful. Now I don't so much. But for this, for me on this, it's a no-brainer. I think that this is a stall tactic. I think there's been so much stuff just sort of ginned up. And that she's not testifying, or it appears she won't testify by Monday. We'll all see soon, but it looks like she's not going to. To me, that just speaks volumes. And I think they've been over backwards, offered to send people out there to have her testify at her own home. They've offered to remove any cameras, which I think would be good anyways, because the whole thing's a circus now. But that they've sort of bent over backwards to meet her demands, and she's not willing to testify, I think speaks volumes, Brooke.
Mm-hmm. Well, she has a North Carolina connection, doesn't she?
She did. I didn't know this till maybe Bob mentioned it in
the office
the other day.
So Bob's our policy director, yeah. And we were all discussing this. And yeah, he mentioned that she went to UNC.
Yep.
She graduated from there. She is a professor.
She is a professor. I don't remember her name.
Ford. Her last name is Ford.
Dr. Ford. I know she has a PhD, and she's at a school in Colorado, I believe, but I don't remember the school.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I was talking to someone else about this, and my thoughts on this are in light of the Me Too moment is when people fabricate, which we don't know all the story, but it doesn't look like her testimony is credible at the moment. But
she can't name a time. I know a lot of people listening have already know this, but she can't name a real firm time frame. She says sort of a month. Mm-hmm. She can't name a place.
Right. Yeah.
To me, it's just so vague.
There's some questionable elements to her statements about this. Even Dianne Feinstein has said, you know, look, I don't know if all that she's saying is true, but hey, it's politically advantageous to do this. So, you know, therefore I'm doing it. That's the new playbook that Washington wants to operate out of. And it's a shame. And they're not going to change until we hold them accountable for it. But back to my point is that I think there's a legitimate concern that we should have women first and foremost, but just society as a whole, women, men, and children, that when people make false sexual assault allegations, just like if people make false racism allegations, it begins to diminish the actual severity of real allegations. You know, the story of the boy who cried wolf. There are all these, you know. When people begin to fabricate stuff like this, it just causes fewer and fewer people to be as inclined to believe the true stories because they become jaded and disenchanted. And so it's incredibly unfortunate, and it's played out in the political world, which means it's played out in front of everyone. Kavanaugh's daughters have to listen to this, and his wife has to walk through this with him.
I saw she baked cupcakes for the media. When this story broke and the media swarmed on their house, she actually went out and handed cupcakes.
That's classy.
Yeah, it is pretty classy. I mean, she knew everybody was watching, so I'm sure that played a little bit into
it. Of course,
But I mean, you still have to go out and do it. And I thought that was pretty classy. She seems like a really nice lady. I know they tried to dig up dirt on her because she worked for the city of, I can't remember if it was Arlington, but some city in Northern Virginia. She's like a city manager or something, and they never found anything. But I know that there was people on social media trying to dig up dirt on her and her occupation, and it looked like it failed. But it was interesting to see the desperation there to try to dig up dirt on his wife.
Yeah, it's sad, but the gloves always come off, especially when it comes to the Supreme Court battles, because people put so much stock into these nine justices as if they are God here on U.S. soil, because we give them power
power. The legislature cedes too much authority to them, so they have too much power. Yep.
It's insane. So if anything, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, you know, just consider, are you okay with allowing nine people to make major decisions that have incredible societal implications for years and generations to come? Are we okay with really putting that much authority into one basket? That's why we have a three branch government. So let's start using it. But something I wanted to highlight on this is it brings up the good point about hypocrisy on violence against women. And National Review had a really good piece that actually was released this afternoon, a couple hours ago. It's called The Democrats' Hypocrisy on Violence Against Women. It's by Jeremy Carl. And he highlights Keith Ellison as one example, which Keith Ellison is a congressman, and he's also a deputy chairman for the Democratic National
from Minnesota.
Convention.
I think he's running for attorney general in Minnesota.
He might be. He's a congressman right now. But you know, we hear all these platitudes from the left, and it's always believe her, listen to her. Any allegation should be treated seriously. But yet when it actually gets played out on the other side, doesn't seem like they're taken quite so seriously. Now, who was it? Al Franken. That one was taken seriously. I think that there was it had to be given the optics of everything during that time. But Keith Ellison, he had a domestic violence, credible domestic violence call on him, as well as another accusation that seems fairly credible too. And yet you hear crickets. You still see them being promoted.
Well,
him.
I thought it was interesting too. I mean, if you want to look at it from a partisan perspective, the Democrats, when Bill Clinton was president, they were very effective in pushing back against some of the women that accused him of assault. That Juanita Broderick accused him of rape. Kathleen Willey, if you remember that name, she said Clinton tried to force himself in the Oval Office on her and bit her lip and did all these things to her. So, you know, I think James Carville, a great political strategist, made that comment about, you know, we just drag 100. This is in reference to Paulus Jones. You know, you just drag a $100 bill through a trailer park and all these women will come out, you know, to make accusations. So you have, I think, you know, the Democrats at one time were better against, if you want to call it this, pushing back against women who are making accusations. So I'll give credit to Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He seems like he's bent over backwards to accommodate this woman who's made this accusation against Kavanaugh, trying to get her to testify. You can argue, if you want, that you know that's a trap, but I think that's the best opportunity that she's given. I think it's a fair opportunity. So I've actually been impressed with the way that his staff has sort of calmed down, and he himself has sort of, you know, made a way to give her an opportunity to tell her story, and that's pretty much what he's said consistently.
Yeah. She deserves to be heard.
And I think
if
so
she's going to come
I've always
forward.
Said that from the beginning, that she deserves to have her story told. I mean, this is an important position, obviously. And if there's something to this, I think she should come forward and say what happened. And that there's just such vagueness around it, though, has really put me off to it being really anything credible.
Right. And you always want to have justice served. And
I think there's one more valuable thing we can say about sexual assault, too, because we hear so much about on college campuses and stuff. I think if we want to be effective in sort of dealing with this, and my wife does Title IX investigations for a university. She's very fair. She does a really good job. I'm biased, of course, but I would think that a lot of people that have worked with her think she does a great job. But one of the things that I think that we need to deal with is alcohol. Because to me, there's just so much, you know, on college campuses, is like just this fusion of alcohol and sexual assaults. And there's really no clear delineation sometimes about what occurred, why it happened, or, you know. And so I think I think we need to do a better job. And that's one of the things she does, is just educating people about alcohol awareness. You know, I like beer, but if you're going to abuse alcohol and be around people of ill report, then it's going to cause problems. So I think that's one thing that we need to look at as a society, just in general, is how we sort of fuse alcohol and social environments.
That's a really good point. And just also another aspect of this is biologically, the frontal lobe hasn't completely developed until maybe mid 20s or early 20s.
Mine developed so early, bro. I can't even believe you're saying that.
You're just
I was
so
a prodigy.
Wise. Yeah. and here he is.
Right.
No, but young people aren't the greatest at decision making. If you have a teenager in your home, that's me. I'm raising my hand right here. It's a reason that teens still live in the home with their parents, so that we can walk them through this navigating this new area of adulthood and extra responsibilities. And part of the challenge, though, for parents is that they have a very strong will as a young adult or teenager, but not a really strong. Some of them have a strong moral compass, but not strong decision-making skills. And so, the confluence of alcohol with partying and then just not even being able to make wise decisions, it's just a recipe for disaster. It's incredibly unfortunate that so many people are impacted negatively on college campuses by this. A lot of girls have stories, I'd say. But on the other hand, the stories aren't... the stories of sexual assault on campus, to use your wife's, you know, job as an example. I'm sure she hears a lot of stories. But it sounds like Okay, I'm just going to read this from the National Review article that I was just referencing. Hillary Clinton's campaign site in 2016 was posting a false claim that 1 in 5 women on campus would be victims of sexual assault. Actually, the numbers aren't that high, though. The number of women experiencing sexual assault in 4 years of college is closer to 2.4%, with just 0.8% being victims of rape. But that's, why do you think that Hillary Clinton's campaign and just some Democrats like to make sexual assault seem like it's more rampant than what it really is?
I think part of it is just the victim mentality today. I think there's some women, and I don't want to obviously downplay problems that are on campus, because I think there are certainly problems with males taking advantage of women in certain situations. I think that is just prevalent on campuses. But I don't think that, you know, the traditional rape where there's like an intruder or someone that maybe you don't know. Most rape cases are obviously people you do know. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes this sort of a traditional like male predator is overplayed. I think part of that has to do with people want to be victims today. You know, there's a drawn out.
You get rewarded for being a victim.
Yeah, I mean, there's a hierarchy today, right? If you're a victim, you're higher on a hierarchy, or people.
You get more intersectionality points.
Yeah, that's true, and I think people just get more attention. People like attention. There's some narcissism today too, but you know, as a serious measure, I think that there just needs to be a little bit more education about the. Just human sexuality in general and what that means. And because I think, Brooke, you made a really good point when we were just talking about this at the desk the other day, was that we kind of teach a lot of women that it's just a physical transaction. You know, sexual relations today is a physical transaction. So they're not equipped to deal with some of these things that happen to mm-hmm. them emotionally. So after an event happens or something that happens to them, then they start having regrets and they start, you know, not being able to deal with all that stuff emotionally. And you can totally sympathize with that person. But was it a rape, I guess, would be the
right.
The
case. Well, because we have tried the feminist movement, the second right. wave feminist movement has tried to condition women to think that it is just a physical transaction. And so when young ladies experience this wave of emotions that they're not able to really orient within the framework of this just solely physical transaction that they've been told occurred. They think, OK, well, then that means I wasn't actually a willing party. Therefore, I must have been assaulted. I mean, it just creates these conditions that I think make it seem more prevalent than it really is. Although
there's a Prager video that people can go watch, I think, that addresses this exact topic, the 1 in 4.
So is it one that was banned by Google or not?
I have no idea. You never know. But I've seen it within the last month, so it may be out there. You can go on YouTube and find it. But
I'll post the link.
I think it deals to that 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 sexual assaults on college campuses today. And unfortunately, I think that you have a lot of people who are just not equipped to handle the sort of sexual fiascos going on college campuses today that are sort of dumped off in that campus environment, and they're just not equipped emotionally to deal with that.
Because I don't think we were designed to emotionally deal with it like that. I don't think that's part of the original framework of humanity. So anyways, there's a lot we could keep discussing.
There's so
that.
Much to unpack. I think the main point for me is I'm just kind of sad that I feel like Brett Kavanaugh's reputation has been sullied to this degree. It's just kind of sad that and I think a lot of this is just being driven, whatever side you're on, I think so much of this is just being driven by politics and partisan politics today. Mm-hmm. And it's destroying people and their families and their reputation. And it's ugly to see.
It is. It is ugly to see. So let's hope that we can see some improvement in our political discourse going forward. That's what we hope we can champion. And I know you all, you faithful viewers and listeners, that's something that we probably largely agree on. And so let's do our part to improve on that. But let's pivot a little bit, because I want to talk about middle names, Ray. What's your middle name?
My middle name is Raymond.
Raymond.
My first name,
so you're
my
Ray
first
Raymond?
Legal name is Michael.
Michael.
I don't tell many people that, but yeah.
But now you're telling all of Facebook land that and the radio. So.
I have to delete that. Cut that out.
But so you and I have been talking in the office because you've got quite a list of middle names, because you and your wife are getting ready to welcome another little Milstein.
His first name's going to be Henry.
Nice.
So James and Henry, two classic sort of English names.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to think about middle names. I came up with the idea Knox originally. And then Kelly really liked that. And then I've kind of backed off of it.
Because she liked it? You're like, oh, I want to be
contrary? No, I don't know if it was that. I just don't know if it rolled well with like Henry Knox Notstein. There's actually a famous general in the Revolutionary War named Henry Knox. He worked with Washington. He was the one that drug the cannons down from Canada and put them up in Boston Harbor and bombed the British. He was a big hero in the war. So I think he was like that's what Fort Knox is named after, is Henry Knox. But anyways, there's obviously the Scottish theologian, John Knox. who basically turned Scotland into a Protestant nation. So, you know, that name has some credibility, but I'm just not sure yet. I've sort of been kicking around some different names. I actually thought about maybe giving him the name Raymond, thought maybe Morgan.
Morgan,
I don't know about
okay.
Morgan, but...
Well, let me ask you about his first name. Henry, is that a family name?
Well, I did have on my dad's side a great-grandfather named Henry.
Okay. All right. Well, that's neat. So that's a family name. I really like Henry Knox. That's what I was voting for. So if you've got a suggestion and you're listening or watching on
Legitimate
Facebook,
suggestions, not like Bodie McBoatface like they did in England.
We want to hear your suggestions. I will take illegitimate suggestions, too, because it will be good for a laugh. But
yeah,
anyways, all the best to you, Ray, as you try to figure out your son's middle name. Hopefully you can decide before he's actually arrived.
I hope so. Yeah.
But so also we talked about at the beginning of the show, we just finished our poll lunch for September poll. Why don't you tell us what one of the biggest takeaways was for you?
Well, I thought what Brock McCleary, the guy we mentioned from Harper, that he's the president CEO of Harper, I think, he came down and talked about immigration and how when I suggested polling the immigration because I thought it would be much better for the Republicans. Republicans are getting beat right now for a lot of good reasons, but I thought it would help Republicans. Might be some good news in the poll, but McCleary made the point that they only had a 4-point advantage on this issue, saying who would handle immigration issue best in Congress. Would it be Republicans or Democrats?
And that's within the margin of error, even. So
yeah,
a 4-point
yeah.
lead on
so
that.
It was only, I thought it would be much, much bigger for Republicans, and they only had a 4-point lead. And McCleary talked about this is an important issue where Republicans usually have a huge advantage, and they don't this election cycle.
And that's an important election issue.
Yeah. So to me, that really jumped out. He did talk about the congressional races and the Senate races. And, you know, he talked about in the Senate, if I forgot who he mentioned, but you know, there were some important races. Donald talked about the importance of the Tennessee race between Phil Bredesen, the former governor in Tennessee, and Marsha Blackburn, who is running for Senate over there, and how that could be a barometer for control of the Senate. Although McCleary thought that the Republicans would probably retain the Senate and he could pick up as many as 2 seats. I could see that, too. ICE was the other thing we talked about. Big support North Carolina for ICE. I think it was 67%.
Which, why are we even having this discussion about ICE not existing? Well, I mean,
yeah, because the left likes to push that Overton window to the left more and more and more. And they just want to debate ICE. And to me, it's ridiculous. I don't think you have a country. I've always considered myself somewhat moderate to liberal on immigration. I'd like to have a guest worker visa program. I'd like to have more people in this country that need to be here. But, you know,
do you support merit-based immigration?
I do. I like actually some of Trump's ideas. I don't support Trump on everything, but I like some of his ideas on immigration. But if you don't have borders, I don't really believe you have a country, right? I mean, these are basic things that I think a country needs to do, or a nation, to be sovereign, is to have borders, legitimate borders where people just don't go in and out all the time, for national security reasons as well. But, to me, it's just interesting that, And Donald made point of this, is that North Carolina has a little bit higher support nationally for just solid support for ICE. And there's been a big push. I mean, even Beto O'Rourke in Texas, who's this new superstar of the left that's challenging Ted Cruz.
He's giving him a run for his money, too.
He sure is. The polling's close, and I don't think he'll win, but I think he'll definitely give him a close call there in Texas, but because he's called for banning AR-15s and ICE. So that's kind of what I was getting at is, you know, you've got people even running in Texas. You know, I know there's a lot of immigrants and certainly illegal immigrants in Texas, but I just don't think banning ICE is going to be very popular. And he made that point. Brock McCleary made that point that Pelosi doesn't want people
running
for...
It hurts Democrats.
Yeah, it hurts
to
Democrats to keep harping
keep
on this
platform.
Issue. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you made a good point. We're going to have to close, but this is really probably more strategic long-term, trying to move the Overton window.
Oh, absolutely. This is the left's main goal, is that they're patient.
You know, just push the envelope.
Yep.
See what happens. And that is what they're good at. That's why they're called progressives. They're trying to progress something in a certain direction. And this is one area where they know that this abolishing ICE will appeal to at least the more radical elements of their base. And but the whole Democratic Party is moving more left, whereas those Blue Dog Democrats, which we talked about this in
the
lunch too.
That was a good point about Obama.
Blue Dog Democrats actually, yeah, because of Obama, the Democrat Party has become farther left. But there are these Blue Dog Democrats that, in a lot of ways, they identify more with conservative values, maybe not necessarily social conservative ones, but fiscal conservative values. So anyways, but it looks like Republicans are probably going to lose the House if current polling is to be
I think
believed.
So. I think they're going to lose the House, and we'll I don't see. Think it's going to be that close. My first job was for a Blue Dog Democrat, Gene Taylor, out of college, who pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, just an all-around great guy. But those guys don't really exist much anymore. So it'd be interesting to see how just this leftwards lurch. I mean, we got socialists running for Congress, out and avowed socialists. So thanks again for joining us for another edition of Civitalk. We really appreciate your time, and we'll be back with you shortly.